And share my screen. So hello, everybody. Welcome to, excuse me, welcome to the Sprint Showcase for Sprint 104. Let me just share my screen here.
Isn't it 106?
107, rather. I was like totally off. I was thinking 107. And I was wanting to say 107, but I just said 104. Just keeping you guys on your toes. All right. So can you see my screen?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are. So to start, I think I'll go through the normal process, kind of go through each sprint report, and then we'll hand it off for each team to give an update on what they worked on during this sprint. Sprint 107, as I didn't say before. So starting with Team Ona, as we like to do, they have one ticket that they were able to finish, but I think there's actually a few of these which should hopefully be getting updated soon. Looks like another seven that should be hopefully finished here shortly, but we'll let Clay go over that later. Go on to Team JSI. Team JSI was primarily focused on helping with the reporting services with Team Ona, and then the fire interface with Team Mind the Gap. They got through at 11 and a half story points, five separate tickets, and they will have four other ones that will be getting pushed off to a later sprint, I think. On to Team Parrot. They were primarily focused on locale consistency and then fixing Jenkins issues, which is much appreciated. They got through 31 story points, spread across, looks like about eight tickets. And they have a few ones that are still in progress, which will probably be getting finished up here shortly. And then lastly, Team Mind the Gap. They got through 29 story points. I'm not going to count that. I think it's around 15 tickets, primarily focused on, looks like, various types of bug fixes and things. I'm really happy about this performance issue fix. That was a big one. Hopefully we can even talk about in the future doing a point release to get that out soon. So those are the high level sprint reports. Here's Sonar. Does anybody have any comments on what's currently going on with Sonar? Any concerns, questions? All right, everybody's happy with it. I was supposed to be looking through this to evaluate which pieces to spend more time on, but I did not get to that during this last sprint, so I'm going to try to get to that hopefully later today, actually. Okay, so that's the high-level overview. I'm going to hand it over, I think, to Clay. Are you ready, Clay, to go through Team Ona's last sprint?
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, I will stop sharing and let you take over.
Cool. So I'll share my screen and start with the Jira board. Just give an update on what we've gotten done this sprint and what we weren't able to get to. So can everybody see the Jira board?
Yep, we got it.
Okay, cool. So as you mentioned, Wes, these three that here that we had in review at the when you were reviewing the report at the beginning of the meeting, will be moved to the done column after this. In terms of what is still in progress, the NiFi connector, well, I guess I'll talk about what we finished before I go through what's still in progress. So this ticket here that is in the done column was the ticket that Jeanette spoke about last week that had to do with having NiFi take data from the API, pass it to Kafka, and then this ticket was, Kafka
Did everybody else just lose Clay as well?
Yeah.
Maybe he's pausing for dramatic effect, but I'm guessing that their connection just went down. All right, let's just wait for a couple of
minutes here.
Oh, are you back, Clay?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we lost you there. Once you started talking about 5112.
Cool. Okay. Sorry, you need me to talk about 5112 again?
That's where we lost you.
Okay. Yeah, so that is essentially taking data, that's having Kafka receive data from NiFi and pass it to Postgres. There were some things last sprint that we needed to close up, but those were finished up earlier this week. And that, you know, kind of applies to any API. It's just a generic way for Kafka to receive data from NiFi and pass it into Postgres. So this is the type of activity we need to do as we go through new APIs. For 5287, this is the ticket for defining the reference data schemas in Postgres and having NiFi essentially take data from the reference data APIs and put it into Postgres. And so we've got that closed up. It's in review because we needed Peter to review something. He did it last night. I'll move it over to Dunn now. And then these other two, the first was identifying the data elements in the requisitions API, or the data points from a requisition, you know, JSON record that were pertinent for reporting. We were primarily focusing on the 12 ELMIS reports that were prioritized as a part of the GAP project, but we did take in some additional data points that we thought would be, you know, potentially relevant in the future. And so it essentially, this ticket, you know, defines the schema of the tables that will be holding requisition data in Postgres. and then lastly, this item about the reporting project plan is just sort of meant to capture defining our full set of epics that we want to work on for the remainder of the 3.5 release. And kind of coming up with a sequencing and a prioritization for those. And I reviewed those with some members of the Village Reach team earlier this week, and that is now posted on a wiki. Similarly, this the scheme, the data architecture is posted on a wiki as well. So if anyone's curious, they can go ahead and check that out through the links in these tickets. In terms of what is still in progress, The build for the NiFi connector to fetch data from the requisition API and store it into Postgres. So the kind of the consequence of the, you know, the next step after 5324, like I was describing, we have this ticket done for three of the four requisition tables, and it's sort of the three main four or the three main ones. One that holds requisition data, which is kind of data on facilities, programs, processing periods, and things of that nature. We have the requisition line items table completed. Here, I can actually show you this in Superset. this is the data that we've taken from the UAT server through the requisitions API endpoint. And we've got data loaded here for our requisitions table. Our list of line items here. Some of these fields you'll notice are blank, but that was just sort of the nature of the data we were fetching. And here we have a status history table. And so these are kind of the three main tables that we'll need to start writing the ELMIS reports that we're going to focus on in the next sprint. What we're still working on is the requisition adjustment reasons table, and specifically populating the requisition line item ID into that. It's just sort of a way that these adjustments and reasons are stored within the line item that we're working through in the Jolt spec. So I guess any questions about what we've got done? Otherwise, I can go through some of these things that we weren't able to get to in this sprint.
Doesn't sound like there's any questions, Clay. Go ahead.
Cool. Okay. Otherwise, I know Jason and Craig have been, Jason's been tied up with like an Onodata server issue, and so he wasn't able to work on some of the DevOps tickets. And Craig has been traveling around a bunch, and so he let me know he wasn't able to make any progress on his tickets. Yeah, Jeanette started working on this ticket 5330 earlier today, around having yesterday, excuse me, around having being able to control dashboard and chart level access within Superset. So that's a research spike that's underway, and this is part of a larger epic that'll span a few sprints. And then this ticket here from Craig, we're waiting to get some access to some real-world Malawi data that we would load in to the reporting stack and ultimately uses the sort of data that drives the ELMIS reports that we've built. Cool. I think that does it for Team Ona, unless there are any questions.
All right, Clay, thank you very much. It's fun to be able to see the little bits of Superset and this whole stack coming together. I'm really looking forward to like the full demo when we get it. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
All right. Next, let's go to JSI, Team JSI, and Elias. Would you mind starting us off there?
Hi, I am sharing my screen. Can you see my screen?
Yep, we got it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Team JSI was focused on continuing work on reporting service with Team ONA and some spikes that we had to do with Fire interface with Mind the Gap team. In particular, I was working on the spike to run Happy Fire as an option for OpenLMIS. This is a story that I worked on. With this story, what we tried to do was try to run a new microservice that uses Happy Fire as a Fire server and run it as part of the OpenLMIS. This proof of concept is developed, and as part of that story is also documented in this GitHub repository. This is just a proof of concept at this point, but will probably be implemented in full detail in the upcoming sprint. So this is one of the deliverables for the past sprint. This is also something that was demonstrated in the MCSD meeting a few days back, and that's one of the deliverables. For the other stories, Mohammed would be giving his update. Mohammed?
Okay, yeah. Hi, yes. Hi. Yeah, I'm going to share my screen. Okay. Just.
All right, we can see your screen, Mohammed.
Okay, all right. Okay, so I'll be showing the tickets for myself, also Dunia. Dunia, actually, he called me before the meeting. He said that he don't have any power in the building that he was planning to join from, but he said that he will try to find a spot where he can join, but it looks like that he didn't find any spot. So, but he provided me updates, so I will be showing his tickets as well as mine. So let me start with my tickets. So I worked on a few tickets. So I have three in the done column. So one of them was there was a question from Clay about some reports. So I provided the reply to that. So, so and then I also have a couple more tickets that were done, completed. One of them was to create the mapping for stock imbalance report between ELMIS and OpenLMS database structure. So I have this file, actually. Let me open it from my local. So this gives you some detailed mapping between the two databases for the field that we display on the report. So in the first column, so we have the field that we display on the report, and then I put that which table the fields are coming from, what's the attribute name from the table, and then which schema that that information is coming from. And then I also try to map on the other side, OpenLMS, that what would be the corresponding table in the OpenLMS database, and the attribute in the table, and which microservice that it will come from. So I believe that this will help to design the queries after looking at this mapping. And also I try to highlight what are the calculated fields in the report. So in, for example, in this specific report, stock imbalance report, so there are two calculations that we use, one for order quantity and the other for status. So status is actually a coding like OS, US or SP. So they have been explained here, and then how they are calculated is also explained here. So I believe that this mapping will help in writing the query for the superset reports. Okay, and then I also have another ticket. So this ticket is also related to the stock imbalance, but it's trying to create the map, the query for the report. So what I have done in this report, that I try to create a query or minimum a simplified query for this report. And because currently this query is based upon the view, but the view also has some other additional columns that are used for some other reports. So the idea was that we'll create a query that's only for this report, what fields, what tables that we need to write the query for this report. So that's what I have tried it here. So, and it explained that what are the calculation that are done in the report. So I have the logic here. And then I also created the mapping that I actually used from the other report. So the mapping between the ELMIS and the V3 databases. So I believe this query will help to understand that how we will convert this query into superset, and also provide some mapping between the two databases. So I believe that will be helpful. I'm planning to put these documents into Confluence Space so that we can collect the feedback and update accordingly. All right, so then I have one ticket that I started. Actually, I thanks Cliff for providing a link to. This is about setting up the superset in my local environment so that I can create the queries for the superset and also try out different things. So that was the purpose of this report. So I actually have started, Clay provided me some links to follow, to set up. So that's in progress. So these are my tickets that I have worked in this sprint. Any question before I move to Adunia's work?
I think there's just one thing I wanted to call out. In some of the calculations or that you were showing, I noticed the AMC. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to call out for Clay and team that version 3 does average period consumption and monthly consumption. So just wanting to note that there's a little shift in those calculations, and I'd be happy to walk you through that. Just meaning it's a little more flexible in version 3 than it was in Elamios. So just around the AMC calculation, let's make sure that we get that right. And if you come into any hurdles there, let me know.
Cool. We're fetching average consumption directly. Maybe we can follow up on it separately. Yeah.
Okay, I was just making, it's just they're called different things in version 3 than they were. So I just want to make sure you're using the right one.
Cool.
Okay, any other question, feedback? Before I move to Adunia's work. Okay, I guess I can move on to show Adunia's tickets. So he worked, he started to work on 3 tickets in this sprint. One of them he completed. Let me open the one that he completed. So this is to develop the requirement document for the stock imbalance report. So the idea was that we'll create a reference document for this report and include the different sections so that act as the reference document for this report. So he created the document and this is what it looks like. And he said that he will put in the Confluence page so that everybody can see it. But you can see that he has added the summary, different component in the report, try to explain that what each the field or attribute that is displayed on the report, any validation that's done on the report, what sort of data is fetched. He tried to explain any color coding that was used in the report, any pagination issues, data formatting, exporting. So all those information, so he added for this stock imbalance report into this document. And also he pointed out the developer resources, what are the different Java files that are used in the report. So they're all in this detailed document. So I believe that this will be a good reference point, document for the report. And then the other document that he created, the same similar document for the timeliness report. This is one of those 12 reports. And again, the structure is same, that he tried to put the all the details about the report. So this document will also be available in the Confluence page. So he said that he will try to do upload to the Confluence either today or tomorrow. So once he put it there, then I think this will be available. And going back to...
Mohammed, can you just share the Google Sheets link in the ticket?
Sure, I will do that. I will share that Google document. Okay, and then he's working on 53, 39. He's still working on it. So he will continue to work on this is for the stock status summary report with the map. So this is another report out of that 12 reports. So he will produce the similar document for that report. So those are the tickets that he asked me to present. So any question, I will make note of that questions, and then if I can answer, I will answer. If not, then I will ask him and try to get the answer from him.
I just had one comment. Those reports look great. I was wondering if it might be possible, instead of just taking the document and linking it in Confluence, if you could actually take the content and just put it in a page, because it's, you know, that kind of content fits in really well on the wiki.
Yeah, that's what he's planning to do. Yeah.
Oh, great. Perfect. Yeah. That's great.
Any other question, feedback? If not, that's all from just from my side.
Great. Thank you very much, Mohammed. Was there any questions, by the way, for Elias and the work that he was doing with the MCSD stuff? Sounds like no. Okay. So, Mohammed, if you don't mind stopping to share your screen, we can move on to... Yep. I forget if it's supposed to be Mind the Gap or Parrot, but I'm going to pick Mind the Gap. I think that's easy.
Yeah, I can remember.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. I hope you see my screen.
Yep. We got it.
Okay, so the first task is very straightforward. I simply removed a processing period delete endpoint. That's all. Yep. Here's the commit that removed the endpoint. Also, the endpoint is not available in the API console. It's not possible to delete a period from now. And the next ticket was about a print button that it should be disabled when we are offline instead of hidden. So I have an example. So we have an open requisition, and we have a print button. And when I go to offline mode, the button is still there, but I cannot execute an action because we are offline. If I back to online and click the button, the requisition should be print. I mean, the report should be created. One moment. Okay, next one was about that our user's write search always requires supervisor node ID. So it was not able to find a user that have find users that have a given right for home facilities supervision role assignment. So I changed that, and now if we execute the endpoint with all parameters, so the right ID, program ID, and supervisor node ID, we get users that have supervision role assignment where with a correct supervisor node, program ID, and right. So in this case, I'm looking for users that have CC inventory edit write for API program for Kuamba supervisor node, and I get only one user. And in this example, I removed the supervisor node ID parameter and I get three results. So those users have CC inventory edit write for their home facility for API program. Next ticket was about comparing performance of Herve and Happyfire servers. There's a wiki page that contains all information about performance tests that were executed. There's what tests were executed, what request body was, and response time. Also, there is a repository that contains results. And yeah. Okay. So basically, that was our task that I've done this sprint. Now, a few bugs. So the first one, there was a problem with updating a facility. So firstly, I thought the problem is only with incorrect Unique constraint on the database. So I modified it. But the problem was still there. So I checked the code and I modified it. So before my changes, when we update a facility, we simply create a domain object from the DTO and we save it. And now we retrieve existing resource from the database and we update related fields. After that changes, everything works fine and user has ability to update our facility. Next bug was about that. So if we have a requisition with several approval stage and the first user approve the requisition and he back to requisition product grid view, he will still saw a approve button because we check only if the user has approved right for the given facility and program, but we didn't check if the given user has right for the supervisor node that was set in the requisition. And currently we start looking on that, and the button is visible only if user has approved right for the given program and facility, and if user has right for the given supervisor node. The next bug was about incorrect error message when two user tries to, in this case, approve. Submit and authorize a requisition. So the first user do that, the second to wait a few seconds and try the same thing. And the message was incorrect because the second user get an error message that the requisition has been authorized, but the user has no permission to approve it. Has no permission to change a requisition status, but from now there will be a message that there is a new version of requisition and user should refresh the page. And the last bug was about our demo data pipeline. So basically, because in this case we start up Rev distro, in some cases there could be a problem because of taken port for the console in this case. I found out there is possibility to retrieve data from Docker containers without starting up them. So I modified the pipeline in this way that from now Rev distro is not startup. We simply create a Docker container and then we retrieve data that files that we want. Thanks that also our build speed up from few minutes to less than 1 minute. And basically that's everything from me. Do you have any questions?
I had one comment on the issue where you disabled the print button when you went offline.
Yes.
When you showed it to us, it looked like there's no actual visual indicator that you can't click on it when you go offline. It looks the same. It just doesn't do anything.
You mean that the cursor icon was not changed, yeah?
Well, I can't see your cursor. I can only see the button.
Yeah, this one case. But yeah, the cursor is not changed. It's still the same.
But I actually meant the button itself. Like, it seems like what I would have expected is that when you go offline, that button, the color would change or something would change to indicate you can't do this. So if I was a user and I go offline and I click that and nothing happens, I'm just going to try to click it like a million times and then become annoyed until maybe I figure out that it's due to me being online or offline. But it seems like there should be some kind of visual indicator to say you can't do this.
I think there's a small change, but I think
there is not a slight color difference. It's actually our style guide shows the disable button, and it might not be shown perfectly when screen sharing. It's more noticeable when actually using the website.
I mean, we can just take that as a style guide. I do remember this and I see the difference when it happens. It's just so slight. I think Wes is just pointing out that it's not enough per se maybe. So we should take a look at that. But there is a difference for us. It's just very, very slight.
Okay. Yeah. Slight enough that I was looking for it and I still didn't see it.
Should we create a ticket for that? So the button should be, should have a different state or something when we are offline and the button is disabled?
Well, it is going to be a disabled state. I think it's more of evaluating this UI guide and if we are wanting to change the state of disabled to be a little more pronounced. Right, Nicodem?
Yeah, we can do that.
So we can create a ticket and talk about when we want to do that, but yes. Because it would be a UI change, so we'll have to think about that and go through a review of it. It's a good idea.
Okay. Thanks. If there is no more question, that's everything from me. Thanks. Nicodem, would you like to?
I will be the next one to showcase what I have. Let me just screen share. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yep, we can see your screen.
Okay, so the first thing I was working on this sprint was creating a functional test for updating regular requisition. So just to showcase this, I will simply show the review. As you can see, you have the steps, and on the left, we have the steps definition. You can as well, you can see, oh yeah. Here you can see that the test is passing for the last build, and it actually is executed on Jenkins, so yeah. I mean, it's pretty much it for the functional test. There's not really much to show. The next one will be adding linters to build process. This one took some time actually, but now all our builds are supporting linter, so we can hopefully catch some sonar issues before we push the code to it. So as you can see here we have an example of a failed build that actually failed because of the ESLint errors. So you can see that we have two problems with the code. We have an unused field, which is defined but is never used. So we will fail the build at the build stage and we won't go to sonar and we won't push the changes to test. So yeah. And here we have an example of a build that passed, and as you can see, the ESLint task is being run and it didn't introduce any problems, so the build passed. I think that's pretty much it if it comes to linters. And other than that, I had like two bugs. So first of them was print not working for on the view proof of delivery screen. The problem with that was we weren't opening the window that was showing the proof of delivery in a direct callback to the user's action. And because of that, the opening of that window was treated as a pop-up window. So some of the browsers are actually preventing them from displaying if the user said so. And this was done to, it was fixed by simply making sure that we open the window in a direct action in a direct callback to a user's action. So we are not doing it
from within a den of for promise or something like that. Yes, so that's pretty much it for this one. And the last thing I was working on was fixing the performance issue with the login. To showcase this, as I think it's worth showing, I will basically run the login side by side. On the right one is the current state, so it's on the test server, and on the left one is the it's a local instance. I mean, it's the UI local UI run against the test server, but with all the changes reverted. So to showcase this, I will simply log in and show that the problem no longer occurs, and the login itself is much faster. I will start with the pre-changes to give it a little head start. Yeah, so pretty much that's it. The login is done on the test server, and you can see I'm only running the reference data UI. So on test we actually had to do a little more. So yeah, it was mainly done by changing how our requests are done. Let me just show this for the pre-changes state. So as you can see, we are doing a bunch of requests, but they are not being done concurrently. They are being done in a specific order, and it lengthens the time the login takes. And for the current state, the network looks something like this. So you can see the requests are being done concurrently when it is possible. And that performance gain was also due to the usage of PushDB when fetching minimal facilities. So before that, we were basically placing them in the local storage, which was done in a way that we were actually converting them to JSON and then putting them into the local storage one by one. With PushDB, we are basically passing the objects, and we can do it in bulk. So the operation is pretty instant compared to the previous approach. The only downfall of that is the OpenLMIS no longer works for a private browsing in Firefox, as it is not supporting the PushDB. I mean, the PushDB is not supporting a private private browsing on Firefox, and that's due to some security reasons with storing the data in the local and in the IndexedDB. So yeah, but as far as I remember, we were never officially supporting private browsing on both Firefox and Chrome. Yeah, so that's pretty much it for me. Are there any questions?
What happens if you do try that? Like, what does PouchDB do if you do try it with Firefox private browsing?
I can show this really quick. Let's actually test. So when I try to log in, I'm basically getting an information that the IndexedDB is going bad, and we can basically open a connection to the IndexedDB in a private browsing on Firefox. It works for Chrome, but yeah, but that's probably a difference in how Firefox and Chrome deal with the private browsing.
That's your local host and not test.
Oh, so that might take some time. Yeah. And as you can see, for the Chrome, it works pretty much as for our regular window, even in incognito. Yeah, so are there any questions?
I had a question about the linting work that you did. First off, I'm glad to see that. It's excellent. I had a question about whether or not developers can run that locally before they push and then get that error during the build process on Jenkins.
Yes, so the linting is actually part of the default build process. So it will be run automatically unless no lint flag is set. So it will be run by default with every build. Doesn't matter if it's local or on Jenkins.
So then we really shouldn't see that pop up too much on Jenkins unless.
Yeah, we shouldn't.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so are there any other questions?
I have a question about the ticket loop and the functional test.
Yeah.
Have you verified all the beta test cases that you can mark as covered by functional test?
I didn't.
I should also mention that for the functional tests, both Joanna's and myself will be taking a look at the functional tests and which manual test cases should be deaded once each of those are completed. So that is part of our review.
Okay, great. So who should I pass the ball to now? Claudia, okay. Let me stop sharing my screen.
Okay. First ticket was a bug about incorrect sort in requisition template. And in this ticket, I simply moved this locked columns to the top of the list. And the next two are about adding a sample configuration for currency, number, and date time to RevDistro and using them in other services. And also, as a scope of this ticket, I exposed these settings via an API. And you can see them in local settings. All of them are added here. And I believe that's it. Do you have any questions?
Can you go back to the first issue or ticket that you were talking about?
Yeah.
That one. You said that you updated it so that all of the locked columns will show up at the top no matter what?
For now, all locked columns will be on the top.
Is that? This is more of a question for everybody too. Is that what we want? That all the locked columns will always be at the top?
Yeah, this is how it's defined in the configuration guide. The columns with this lock icon are columns that cannot be changed. The order of those columns cannot be changed, and they should always appear in as the first columns in the requisition. Yeah, this is the correct screenshot here. For the bug, what happened was when new templates were being created and new requisition templates were edited, these lock columns appeared in a different order.
Yeah.
For the administrator as they're configuring the requisition template.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure when I heard that, and I saw it briefly, I was thinking, wait, is that always what we want? But it sounds like it is. Okay.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, so who wants to be next? Maybe someone in Gdynia?
I can be next.
Okay. Okay. So during this sprint, I finished the ticket about Traverse locks, which used to work in a way of retrieving all the entities and iterating through them to find these recently added, which are without any snapshots. So I improved the way to retrieve these entities by making a query to get only entities without snapshots. I have to change screen. Okay, so at first I added this base auditable repository. This repository has a method find all without snapshots, which is extended by all the repositories which should be audited by Jabbers. So, for example, let's take a look at requisition repository. And this is this method. Here's my query. So I found out that we can join three columns together, like requisitions, JV global ID, and JV snapshots. So at first, let's concentrate maybe on this part. We are selecting the requisitions which ID is equal to the local ID of JV global, and then we are also joining the JV snapshots with JV global ID by finding the equal IDs. After finding these requisitions, these entities, we are looking for the ones which are not
in the as the result of this select. So it works fine. So it only fetches the entities without snapshots. And also here in our audit log initializer class, I removed find all method and I implemented this find all without snapshots. So to see that it works, I can show you the database. I can, so I have a distro triggered here on the left side, and I am inside our database, and I want to do a select. JV snapshot. So we can see that there are snapshots made for the positions, so it works as it should. So summing up, so summing up, in the acceptance criteria, I think that these acceptance criteria are met, and this is all. If you have any questions.
So I think I have a question.
Okay.
And maybe I'm wrong about this, but when you execute that query, don't you just you get a list of all of, I mean, so if you start this up with demo data, wouldn't you get anyone with any reference? Wouldn't you just have a list of requisitions, all of which don't have what am I trying to say? Snapshot.
Yeah, so this should return requisitions without snapshots to be able to create snapshots for them, only for them.
Okay, so if we had demo data with a million records in it, when this started up, it would iterate through all of those 1 million records.
Yeah, it shouldn't iterate through all of the requisitions. No.
I'm sorry, there was a lot of background noise. Could you say that again?
And so now it shouldn't get all the requisitions. Of course, when starting demo data, all the requisitions, for example, are new, so it is making the snapshots for them. But if we added another requisition, then it would, during another system startup, it would only add snapshot for the new one.
Okay. So, but just to be clear, like in that first case that I described with records, that first start, it would loop through all 1 million records and add a snapshot one.
Well, as it is in the acceptance criteria, according to demo data.
So the answer is yes.
Yes.
If we have a clean database and we have the profile, the Spring profile active to initialize those Java snapshots, then it will go over all of them because we do not have any snapshots yet.
Okay.
Is that what we want, or is that something that we want to somehow mitigate?
Well, I mean, I think we're still going to have a slow startup with demo data. And so yeah, maybe maybe in the acceptance criteria, I think what we were trying to get at is to try to get away from that, but it doesn't quite put that out there. It does have some mechanisms for it. Okay, anyways. Let's follow up in tech committee, I think is what I'd suggest, and see if we think that the demo data startup is still a problem. You know, its speed is still a problem with distribution. How's that sound?
It sounds good to me. Is will you put that on the next committee?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay, so who's next?
I think that it's my turn.
Okay.
Let's try to share my screen. Okay. Okay. This one. Okay. Can you see my screen? So.
Yes.
Okay. So the first thing I can talk about quickly is the ticket about fixing the Jenkins issue. So after the while doing the 3.4 release, we've encountered some problems with Jenkins, and we did some work to improve our CI workflow. So the first thing that we did was actually restricting the number of you cannot see the number of workers for each EC2 build node, but it was reduced from 2 to 1. Some issues were that we were seeing was probably caused by running two jobs, two build steps that actually were using the DB, and those two jobs were blocking the same port, so we just reduced the number of build workers and increased the number of EC2 build nodes to 4 from 3. So this was done. Then we also restricted the ERD generation jobs to the master node. To the master node, so because it actually doesn't make sense to run those build steps on any other node, and it was causing some issues, so this was also done. And besides that, we also had some problem with jobbers in the requisition service while running the regular build job not on the master node, on some EC2 nodes. So this was actually fixed probably by changes made to Java's alert lock initializers done by Paulina. So this was fixed and no longer occurs. And then we have a series of random failures on the requisition contract test jobs. So I believe all of them were fixed, and we are no longer encountering random failures for the contract test. The only one that I'm not sure of is there was one problem with services starting before actually database container is initialized. This probably was a problem. But I didn't. I wasn't able to see this issue after some changes. After we did some changes to the contract tests, but this ticket was in progress for like 4 weeks, and we have encountered this problem like twice. And the number of contract tests runs was about like probably a couple of. Couple hundreds, and probably, I've created the issue to follow up, which is this one. If this issue will occur in the contract tests Again, I have some logs. I've provided some logs from those failures in the description. So I'm keeping. I'm looking at the constantly and the contractors, and if I would see any failures around with this problem, I will probably prioritize this ticket and put it in the tech debt. But as I said, this issue was very we've encountered it rarely in this period, so let's hope it was fixed. It is fixed by now. Next we have two tickets from the stock-based requisitions, and I will just quickly summarize them and show both of them in the on the requisition of the test server. The last one from this Epic, we actually had to pull this back to in progress because of one issue that we found in the QA today. So I'm working on it, and probably it will be ready to QA today evening. And let's hope that we will manage to close it fairly soon and then release the requisition service for the Benin demo. So yeah, let's just quickly look at those tickets. So the first one is about enabling the total and number of patients added columns for the stock-based requisitions. And the total and those two columns are actually enabled by default in our stock-based requisition templates in demo data, as you will see soon. And the second ticket is about enabling the adjusted consumption column and additional quantity column for the stock-based requisitions. And the additional quantity is actually used in the, can be used in the adjusted consumption calculation. So this was also enabled. And yeah, so let me just show you how it actually works. So I've already initiated a requisition, and this is a stock-based requisition, as you can see, as I cannot really edit most of the columns, just the requested quantity and so on. Okay, so the first column was total, which is actually sum of this, wait, what is it? Yeah, with stock on hand minus the total consumed quantity plus total received quantity and plus the total losses and adjustments. No, I just messed it up. The calculation is actually done. Sorry, yeah, the calculation is actually done the same as the regular requisition. I just forgot what which columns are actually taken to the calculation, but it is not used later on in the adjusted consumption calculation. But yeah, the second column is number of patients added, which we can add, and the third column is adjusted consumption, as I said, and this column is the total consumed quantity, and we are adjusting it by calculating the additional the quantity based on the total stockout days. So as you can see in this third row, we have total stockout days set to 1, which is actually taken from the stock management. So in this 3 month period, we have 90 days, so the calculation is like 66 divided by 90, so it's less than 1, and we are rounding this up, so we have 66 plus 1, which is 67, and this can also be increased by additional quantity, which is disabled by default, Yes, so I can just quickly show you how it works with the additional quantity. So we can go to requisition templates. Let's see the first one. And as you can see, we have the additional quantity required disabled. We can check this one. Here we have adjusted consumption. As I said, this can be enabled and disabled. Also, we have total and number of patients added. So those columns can be turned on or turned off now, the stock-based requisitions. So we can save the template. Log out. Let me just log as D01. And we can go to requisitions. Okay, I can just delete this. Probably it will be easier to follow up. So let's just start another requisition. And as you can see, we have the additional quantity required. So let's just see this one row. Yeah, this one was 67, right? And we can just increase it by changing the additional quantity required. So actually, the adjusted consumption works as it was working for the regular requisitions. And as you can see, we have the average consumption, which is taken not from the previous requisitions, but from it is taken from actual current state of the stock management of the stock for this facility. So I won't be showing this because we still have one bug to fix. So yeah, but it's, for this case, it's working fine. So are there any questions?
So one thing that wasn't mentioned is that all this data is pulled from stock management, right?
Yeah, all data is pulled from stock management. So the adjusted consumption actually has the same calculation as the regular ones, regular requisitions. And it's based on the columns that are populated from the stock management. So total stockout days and total consumed quantity is based on the stock data.
Okay, and one more thing, I noticed that we still don't have calculated order quantity column enabled. Like for the stock management, stock-based requisitions in the template?
No.
Okay. So we also need a ticket for that, but since calculated order quantity is based on the average consumption, it won't differ for the stock-based requisitions. So once we have a ticket for average consumption ready, we just need to enable that column.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so if there are no more questions, I will just stop sharing.
I do have another question about the Jenkins fix that you had.
Okay.
First off, thank you so much for working on that. That is really important stuff. My question is, so it sounds like you've gone through most of the issues that you know about. So why are we still seeing the number of failures that we're seeing in the Slack channel?
So most of those failures, I believe, was due to work in progress. Some of those probably was work of encoder for the relinters. As I know, probably, because some problems that Sonar actually shows in the code that actually Nicodem changed was not catched by linters. So this can only be verified by Sonar. So this was one thing, and other changes was was mostly really the problems with current changes that actually, lack of test coverage and some regular test failures, as far as I know.
Okay, so just to be clear, the expectation is that going forward, or at least increasingly going forward, there will be no failures that we're continuing to see from Jenkins.
Yeah, at least those that are, as I said, those random failures that are not connected to recent changes shouldn't appear, shouldn't appear.
Okay.
And to add to that, we still have those performance tests failing after a fresh performance test server start. So we have a ticket for that. And yes, as Mateusz mentioned, we won't be getting random Jenkins failures, not like no Jenkins failures at all.
But what is, okay, so then what is the difference then in your mind?
So it will be if someone pushes something that actually fails the build, so the tests don't pass, the Sonar quality gate doesn't pass or anything like that, then we expect the build to fail, right?
Right, but the process for our development process should hopefully have the ability for people to be able to run as much as they can locally so that they can confirm that what I'm going to push is valid before it gets up to Jenkins and it fails the build.
Yes, and we can currently do that for the unit and integration tests. There is a possibility to run contract tests as well. For Sonar, I think this is a little more difficult. So someone can still be getting those failures from because of the Sonar quality gate not passing. We should make it clear that with this ticket, we are fixing random failures that were occurring on Jenkins, so builds failing, even though everything was working as intended. And it wasn't touching the process.
Right, okay. I guess my question is a bit more, like I said, a little bit more general, and I hope that we continue to try to make, as a development team or teams, efforts to make sure that in general, we're not having failures. Both because of the random things that we obviously don't want to see, but then also because of actual genuine things that we're doing as developers that we shouldn't be, or that we're not fully testing.
Okay. So there are no more questions, so I'll just stop sharing with them. Nice work this time. So I believe this was everything from Team Pirates.
All right. Thank you very much. It seems like we transitioned from Mind the Gap to Team Parrot seamlessly there. But did everybody who wanted or needed to share for Mind the Gap get the chance to? I'll take that silence as a yes. Were there any outstanding questions for either Mind the Gap or Team Parrot? All right. Are there any other outstanding questions or comments for this last sprint 107? Y'all are talking a bunch all of a sudden. All right, then. I think we're finished. Thank you all very much. Thank you for the work that you did this sprint. Thank you for the presentations that you gave on the work that you gave. And for those of you who are team leaders, please start your sprint 108 for tomorrow. And we'll see you all again in 2 weeks. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Bye.